couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films on demand like Sela and the Spades, The Quarry, and Behind You. And I'm also going to give a preview to Red Dwarf, The Promised Land, which aired on Dave in the UK last week. I'm going to be talking about news, the box office this week, because there is box office news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Just Mercy. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is a sad one. We lost Brian Dennehy, the actor. He was age 81. He was apparently suffering from sepsis and ended up dying of cardiac arrest. But Brian Dennehy was a staple actor through the 80s and 90s. And he was always that tough guy. He was very versatile. He did comedies, like he was in Tommy Boy, but he also did dramas. A lot of people remember him as the sheriff in First Blood, of course, the first Rambo movie. I always thought that there was always a regret that he never played Commissioner Gordon in any of the Batman movies. I thought he would have been a fantastic Commissioner Gordon ever since I saw the movie FX. And he has a mustache. I mean, it was heavy, but he looked like what Commissioner Gordon totally looked like in the comic books. And as he got later in life, you know, he had white hair, he had gray hair, and he would have been a great Commissioner Gordon. But yes, he will be missed. The next piece of news I want to hit is something that's a little more, delves a little more into national news and politics. Cinemark is looking to reopen its theaters soon. This is all in that midst of the let's reopen the U.S. economy, blah, blah, blah. Just the overall takeaway, though, is you're dealing with a virus. The virus is not something that you can negotiate with. The virus is going to do what the virus does. And the virus is going to behave as a virus is. And by doing social distancing and locking things down, that has greatly reduced the number of viral outbreaks in some places, like my home state of Ohio. And I think that this discussion of movie theaters opening is a great microcosm of everything else in the economy, because this is not a light switch you can flip on and flip off. And just because politicians want the economy going and people want the economy going and people do want to go back to work, people also don't want to put themselves in unnecessary risk and their families in unnecessary risk. I mean, my wife's a teacher. I got kids in school. I don't think they're going to open school in Ohio. Not for the rest of this year. They've already got set up for distance learning. And last thing, there's no way to socially distance in a classroom. My wife has 20-some kids in her class. In the room of a regular, there's no way to put everybody 6 feet apart. No, and then her kids, they're not going to wear masks and follow all the rules because they don't already. And the last thing you want to have happen is there to be an outbreak. When you have an option to do it remotely, do it remotely. And I think that's what we're going to see a lot of. You're going to see, you know, I saw this article about Boeing wants to start manufacturing the factories again. You know that you could do that. You can set up groundwork and regulations for a factory, but you certainly can't open up like a concert venue. There's no way to socially distance that way. Cinemark, which owns like 300 and some theaters nationwide, they may want to reopen their theaters, but you got to realize there's a cascading effect that has to happen. First of all, you need to have enough governors to relax lockdown restrictions to make it profitable for the theaters to open again. If half the states still have these in place, it may not be profitable to open the theaters. And the places that are not being hit hard with coronavirus, like Wyoming, because I've been to Wyoming. Wyoming's a beautiful state. I got stuck in a traffic jam because I went to this big event in Cheyenne. Massive traffic jam. The biggest one you'll ever see in Cheyenne. It was dissipated in 20 minutes. The worst traffic that they have in Cheyenne doesn't even hold a candle to day-to-day Cincinnati traffic during rush hour, or not during rush hour for that matter. So Wyoming's already socially distanced from each other. And so those places have very sparse populations. Well, they're also not the places that are going to bring in the butts in the seats for the movie theater. So while you can open a couple movie theaters in Wyoming, you need the movie theaters open in like New York and LA and Chicago and Detroit, which are the places that are hit hardest. So not only do you have to have the governors come together and relax their restrictions, and that's their own decisions, then you have to have the chains open them. And so Cinemark has to open them, but they can't open the chains if Hollywood isn't going to put movies in the theaters. And Hollywood's not going to put movie in the theaters until they know they can get enough people in there. And if you're socially distancing and you're like maybe every other row's blocked off and every second and third seat are blocked off so people can stay 6 feet apart, you're selling at, what, 20% capacity? There's no way you can make the money with the butts in the seats, even if you pack it to that capacity. You need full theaters to put something like Black Widow in the theaters or Mulan. So not only do you have to have the governors relax, then you got to have the chains open the theaters, and you got to have Hollywood put movies in theaters again, which they're not going to do until they're good and ready, because they can go a year without theatrical releases, and all the major studios are still going to be fine because they have revenue streams coming in elsewhere. But even if you get all that done, the people have to show up. And I hate to tell you, but in this day and age, there's going to be a lot of people that just aren't going to show up. The problem with closing non-essential businesses is they're non-essential, and people will choose not to go to them. And that's the same thing you're going to run into with schools. You're going to have parents just saying, I'm not sending my kids. Look, in my life, my own personal life, my father had a stroke a couple years ago, and I take care of him. I go to his house every day, and I help take care of him because my mom can't do the whole thing herself. And my mom is 75, just turned 75. Happy birthday, Mom. And she's got her own health issues because she's in her 70s. And I have to go over there and take care of them. So I'm not going to go into a movie theater if I think there's like 15 Typhoid Marys sitting out there who's going to give me coronavirus that I'm going to pass on to them back home. So I caution people from being too excited that things are going to go back to normal anytime soon. I mean, at earliest, I think we're going to get theaters open is July, but probably not until August. And only if you'll nip this in the bud and you get some sort of statewide and nationwide testing, at least in the hot spots and the places where they have curves, or a vaccine. This stuff's a ways away. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two really quick ones I want to hit. First one is Proximity, which is available on demand on May 15th from Shout Studios.
Oh, Isaac, can you tell us what happened that afternoon?
A meteorite with smoke trailing behind it appeared over the skies of Los Angeles yesterday.
Isaac, where you been?
You got a minute? I want to show you something.
You're saying this is real.
Are you okay?
You believe me, right?
Where have you been for the last few days?
Yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday, day before.
I'm not making this up. This really happened to me.
Okay.
You've been gone from work all week.
Did you have an encounter with an extraterrestrial being?
This looks interesting. I love science fiction. I love the speculative fiction and where it kind of bleeds into real life. In a way, this kind of reminds me of that movie, The Signal, this guy who got prosthetic limbs. This looks interesting. I'm very curious about this film. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm probably going to cover it in a couple weeks when it comes out on demand. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Psych 2, Lassie Come Home, which is going to be premiering sometime this summer, I think, on the Peacock streaming service, which is NBC Universal's proprietary streaming platform.
Surprise! Surprise! Surprise!
Who the hell are you guys?
I'm a psychic.
He is a sympathetic pooper.
There's a lot of strange stuff going on around here.
Ghosts.
Not necessarily ghosts.
But probably ghosts. No more embarrassing nicknames.
We can't just stop doing bits we've been doing for 10 years.
My name's Sean Spencer. This is my partner, Lego, my ego.
No.
Gus,
we're home.
You can give me some Chewy.
My family's a big fan of Psych. And my sons, two of my sons, my youngest and my oldest, both had their times where they would watch it all the time. They loved the show. And they did a movie a couple years ago. And so they got another movie coming out. And now they've got Lassiter, the character of Lassiter, who's played by Timothy Ombudsman, who had a stroke before the last movie. And he was just in it very briefly in a FaceTime on a phone, but they're bringing him back. And I'm sure they're going to address it in the movie itself. But, you know, it looks like there's a Scooby-Doo angle to this. That might be a lot of fun, but it's great to see Sean and Gus being Sean and Gus again. I am looking forward to it. And that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Sela and the Spades and Behind You.
I know. You know, but I'm not telling the truth. I know, you know, they just don't have any truth.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews because we're going to be talking about some stuff on demand that you can watch at the comfort of your own home during lockdown or quarantines or even just responsible social behavior. The first one is Sela and the Spades. A girl in an elite boarding school who runs a group of students that sells drugs searches for a replacement after her senior year.
At Haldwell Boarding School, there are 5 factions. They will push you past your limit, and therein lies their collective power. But the story isn't about the factions. It's about her, Sela Summers, and what she must do in order to ensure her legacy. Seeing as it's her senior year, and she has no one to pass it down to.
This is being developed into a series on Amazon Prime, but this is the movie that it launches from. The basic structure of this movie is you've got these factions in this boarding school. It's an elite boarding school in Pennsylvania, and Sela is this cheerleader, and she runs this faction that sells drugs. And there's other factions. There's one faction that plans the parties and another faction that I don't really know what all the factions do. Ever since the movie Heathers came out about 30 years ago, there have been overly structured high school movies. And you've seen them where like the new kid comes in and they go, those are the burnouts and they always do that. Those are the DJs and those are the emos and those are the popular girls. And we call them Donnas or whatever. My experience, at least when I was in high school and watching my kids go through high school, is, look, high school's not that organized. This is meant to be representative of society, but I've never seen anything that's that rigid in high school. I have kids that have gone through high school. I know high school students. I've watched them go, they can barely put together a pizza order, let alone organize the entire social structure of a school. This is meant to be symbolic of the greater world. And Sela rules with an iron fist. And she has met this other girl who she's taken a shine to. And she's grooming her to be her replacement for the next year. But she's also facing the struggle of having to give up that power that she's built over these last several years in high school. My big problem with this is it makes it too, like I said, it just makes it too organized. You know, it's kind of like when I saw the movie Brick, that Rian Johnson film from, 15 years ago or something like that, where it was basically meant to be a film noir detective story, but it takes place in high school. And I get what he was doing there. But again, things were too structured. Life is not like that, and it rings as false to me. And the other problem with this movie that I did have a real problem with this. Look, I know different people are different, do different things, and people have had different high school experiences. But I get constantly annoyed, and I talked about this when I talked about the film Banana Split a couple weeks ago. I get constantly annoyed at high school movies where the people who are making the films are like, oh, everybody does this. This is what absolutely everybody does. Everybody has sex with everybody. Everybody takes all the drugs. Everybody drinks every time on the weekend. And my experience has been that that's not true. Yes, you have that behavior happening in schools all the time. You have groups of people and you have high instances here and there. But not everybody is having sex, taking drugs, going to parties, drinking heavily, doing all this stuff. You do have kids that don't do that. But it's the people who make the movies. They did that when they were in high school. And it's a really common psychological thing for people to do, to just assume that everybody has the same vices that you do. Great example is just drinking. I like to have drinks now and then. I have a ridiculously high tolerance. I have an Irish-Hungarian liver that forces me not to have hangovers and stuff like that. But I know plenty of people who don't drink alcohol. Adults. Now, I'm not talking about kids. I'm talking about adults that don't drink alcohol or have had it now and then, but they don't care. Maybe they'll have a drink, but they're not, you know, maybe one glass of wine or something like that. There's a lot of people who don't. And I recognize that. I would never think that everybody is like me, but every single high school movie, everybody's taking drugs. And I'm like, not everybody takes that many. I mean, that's insane. And part of the problem with this is while it's going through all the social structure and showing the interpersonal relationships, still it's kind of a movie about a bunch of black kids selling drugs in school. And I can't get past that because I'm like, really? You're trying to make a movie and they're at a nice boarding school and everybody, people come from family that's higher, but they're still just drug dealers. How is that doing anything for society? Just because they do it with a little more class and organization. What makes them any different than the guy selling dime bags on the street corner? So yeah, that was my problem with selling the spades. It's okay. It's getting a lot of buzz, but I'll give it a kind of rocks just to be nice.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Behind You. After the untimely death of their mother, two girls go to live with their aunt, whose house is haunted by a demon. Oh, I said that nice.
I don't want them here.
They're your nieces. The best thing for them is to be with family.
There are some rules you'll need to follow.
This door leads to the basement. It stays locked at all times.
I saw Mom.
Where?
In the basement.
This one's a little lower budget. It's going direct to video and it's a scary movie. It's a horror film, obviously, and it plays off of the cute kids in trouble kind of role. And in fact, in the beginning, when they first introduce these two sisters, the younger one, pretty blonde girl who's like 9 and she's got braids. I mean, she literally looks like the bad seed in the movie, The Bad Seed. So there's a definite consciousness of what they're trying to do with the characters in this movie in making allusions to previous horror films. And I like that. I think that's great. You know, it's the same thing like, she's got a little stuffed rabbit, I think, that's her toy, and they play around with that. This movie is inspired much more by maybe some of those old evil kids movies, but also stuff like The Conjuring and Insidious, which are modern horror stories that took us out of the gutter of torture porn and found footage. And I think that's great. I fully support that. And while there's hiccups and there's some writing issues in this and some acting issues in this movie, I give it a lot of respect for doing modern horror the way it should be done. And, you know, it's got some spooky moments. It's got some very effective moments. It's a little predictable. And you can tell that it's doesn't have a ton of money behind it, but it's a nice little throwaway. I enjoyed it for what it was. I mean, like I said, you got to jump through a couple hoops in your head to accept what's happening in the film. But I mean, it's like anything. I mean, it's hysterical setup because they go in the house and the aunt's acting weird. And she's like, well, that's the basement. It's locked all the time. Never go down there. Why? Because there's a demon in the basement. But she doesn't tell him that. Spoiler alert, the kids go down to the basement. If you have a demon haunting your house, the first thing you should tell somebody, hell, we're going to come stay with you. Okay, that's cool. Just want to let you know there is a demon. He's haunting the house. He's in the basement. He's going to try and trick you. Do not go downstairs. For any circumstances, it's nothing good. But no one ever discloses that. But you know what? They're kids. Kids are going to go down in the basement anyways. You do realize you could completely disclose your demons to a child coming to live with you. And there's a 50-50 chance that they're still going to go release the demon. Because that's what kids do. But anyways, Behind You, I'm going to give it a kind of rocks. And there's some wrinkles to it. But it's kind of a fun little movie. If you want a throwaway horror film during the quarantine time.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Quarry and Red Dwarf, The Promised Land. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. And we're going to talk about The Quarry. After killing a preacher on his way to a new parish, a drifter assumes the dead man's identity, only to have his crime come back to haunt him.
I'm looking for the church.
You just passing through, I guess?
I'm here to work.
You ever live in a town like this?
Everybody knows everybody, and people think it's quaint. We are made right with God through faith in Jesus, not by obeying the law.
I've known a few preachers in my day. You're not like any of them.
Do I know you? What do you mean? I just feel like I've seen you before.
Who are you?
I am a sinner.
The Quarry was supposed to play at the South by Southwest Film Festival, which got canceled because of the coronavirus. So they pivoted to an online release with VOD. It's basically a new release. And here's a little bit of lesson for you, whether or not coronavirus happens. Back when you had physical prints of films, the smaller companies couldn't strike 1,000 prints of a movie. They'd maybe strike 20 or 30 or 100, and they'd send those prints out to different cities, and that's why you'd have a limited release. They just didn't have the resources to ship and make that many film prints. You know, ever since streaming became a big thing, even, you know, 10 years ago, a lot of these would come out on demand as well as in the limited release structure. Not all of them, but more of them. And I think more you're going to see more of that happening as we go forward. You're certainly going to see more of that happening as we move into the summer when it's unclear whether the large theaters are going to be opened again, you know, and when that's going to happen. Like I said in the first segment, July is a little iffy. I'm thinking by August, as long as we don't have another big surge. And if we have another big surge, everything's going to lock down, and then there goes the fall. But people are smart, and they learn from the mistake. They may have to learn from the mistakes they're making now in terms of relaxing too quickly. But, you know, who am I? I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a politician either. Thank you very much. I approve this message. But you're going to see this a lot with smaller movies, and good for you. I think that they need to be pivoting towards online releases for smaller ones. As much as I love movie houses and theaters, you have an audience out there that can get it online. I think we just need to get used to looking online for new content and more interesting content. And The Quarry is one of those movies. And hopefully this changes things for these smaller films and they get more traction on at-home releases. Now, in The Quarry, you got a pretty good cast. You have Shea Whigham. You've seen him in a lot of stuff. You saw him in The Joker. You saw him in Kong Skull Island. He's been in Boardwalk Empire. He's a great actor. He's been around as a character actor. It's nice to see him get kind of a leading role in this one. He plays the drifter who kills a preacher. And then you've got Michael Shannon, who, of course, everybody recognizes. Most people recognize him as Zod from Man of Steel, but he's been in a bunch of other things. Michael Shannon plays this sheriff who is suspicious of everybody because it's a small town. And the small town has been kind of devastated because a very common thing where they built a bypass and nobody goes through the town. And so all the people who could left, and you're just left with people in poverty and drugs and crime. And in the process, this guy's van gets broken into by these brothers in town who they then, the police then think are responsible for some crimes. This is a slow burn, kind of a modern Western. And it works for what it is. I did enjoy it. It reminds me a little bit of Slow West, which is an actual honest to God Western, but Slow West was one of those that had a very, very, very slow burn trying to twist the suspense of character more than the suspense of action. And it also has some interest. What I found most interesting about it was the main character that Shea Whigham plays. It contemplates who you are as a person. Is it your history? Is it your actions? Or is it who you pretend to be? And if you pretend to be somebody, do you eventually become that person? And in him assuming this identity, he is assuming a very, let's just say, nonviolent role. And he kind of slides into it very nicely, even though he does have violent actions in the beginning. And, you know, it's that contemplation of what makes a man a man, what makes a person a person. And it also has some great performance by Michael Shannon as the suspicious cop, who's a little more pragmatic and realistic and I guess more of an archetype. So, you know, this is a neat little movie. I enjoyed it. It wasn't perfect. It does move a bit slow, but it's an interesting film. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and talk about Red Dwarf, The Promised Land. Now, this aired in the UK on Dave. Dave is a TV station in the UK, if you don't know that. This aired last week. I was afforded a chance to see it, which is nice. And I'm a huge Red Dwarf fan. So this is technically its 13th season, but like they did in the 9th season, they made a separate standalone 90-minute movie. And in this episode, the boys from the dwarf encounter a group of cat sapiens who worship David Lister and must help stop the other cats from destroying, well, everything.
Who are you?
We are fleeing from the feral cats who seek to kill us for spreading your teachings.
Do you think I'm some kind of god? I'm a nobody, really. Come on, guys, back me up here.
He's less than nobody.
Absolute zero.
Act like a god.
Act like a god? You've scarcely mastered human.
Fire everything we have!
We're stranded on this moon, Paul. Is there any way to get out?
Have you considered opening the door?
With a posse. With the boys from the Dwarf.
I'm a huge Red Dwarf fan. I became one about 5 or 6 years ago. I caught the series on Netflix. It's no longer on American Netflix, but I went ahead and got the rest of the series. I watch it every year, and it's a lot of fun. And it's this series has been around since the late 80s, I think. It premiered in like 1988 on the BBC. And they did like something like 6 seasons on that first run, and then they went on a little hiatus, and they came back and did like seasons 7 and 8, which were longer seasons in the 90s, but they also changed the cast up a little bit. But then it went away, and like 1999, it disappeared. And in 2009, they brought the cast back and did a standalone movie, which is 3 episodes essentially of television, called Back to Earth. And I remember actually seeing it before I ever watched any of the Red Dwarf series. And I could tell that there are a lot of inside jokes, but I didn't get them, but I still thought it was a fun little sci-fi piece. Then they ended up bringing back and they did multiple seasons. They did the season 10, 11 and 12, each one with 6 episodes over the last 7 or 8 years. And those are good. Fans differ on which ones they like more than others. Now, I finally felt that once they did season 10 was a little rough. It was still fun, but season 11 and 12, they were finally hitting the stride because the cast got back together. They got the dust out of the gears and they were doing what they have done for sort of the heyday of their shows back in the seasons 4, 5 and 6. One of the problems with Back to Earth was it'd been 10 years since these guys had worked together, and they'd had their own ups and downs in their own personal life, and so they were bringing them back together to try and recapture that magic, but they were still a little rusty. I mean, they still worked together, and they still had their chemistry, but they were rusty. Part of the reason that Promised Land works so well is they've had 3 seasons over the last 5 or 6 years to get that dust out of their gear. And they know what they're doing now. And they've kind of got a new chemistry and they're working towards, keeping their interpersonal relationships, fresh. And that really makes this movie click because even just from the producing and writing angle from Back to Earth, and, you know, even that's a charming little series. They were trying to do a bit of a spin on Blade Runner, and at times are almost going leaning too much into the homage rather than telling an original story. And it gets a little bit goofy and a little bit overly self-aware. Still fun, but this one really feels like it's just a long episode that's come out of season 12. And all the characters kind of click together. And like any good Red Dwarf episode, it's less about the overall plot and more about the interpersonal comedy between Lister and Rimmer and Crichton and the cat and getting them to bounce off each other, but also contemplating some pretty heady issues like the nature of God, which is something that you see showing up as points all the time throughout the Red Dwarf universe. So I gotta say, I was very impressed with what I saw in Promised Land. So when you get a chance, if you're in the UK, you've seen it, you can watch it. Otherwise, you know, hope for when it comes to DVD because it's a great little show. I'm going to say Red Dwarf, The Promised Land totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the box office and the home cinema roundup featuring Just Mercy. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr for the final segment. And I got a couple things I want to talk about. Something that I got an email from George from Clearwater, Florida. And he's a listener and he asked to talk about some stuff to watch during the quarantine. I've been obviously talking about different shows and, you know, TV series and movies and what's available on demand. But those are all told in very general things. When something's VOD, when it's on demand, you can get it kind of anywhere. You can get it through Amazon. You can get it through iTunes. You can get it through usually YouTube even. You can get it through Vudu. Anywhere that has an on-demand platform that rents movies, you can get it. And that's fine for those individual ones. But where do you go for the streaming stuff? Now, everybody knows about Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, and they're all great. They cost money. Disney Plus, throw that in there as well. Disney Plus is interesting because Disney is trying to exclusivize its content. So while there are other things you can still rent elsewhere, Disney's trying to lock their own stuff that if you want to watch the Apple Dumpling Gang, you got to watch it on Disney Plus and nowhere else. And the rights issues are all going to be cycling through, and they're just going to kind of hold on to those as the years go on. But right now you can find some other content elsewhere. But Disney Plus is a great thing too. And all of those, well, Netflix is 100% subscription, but Hulu and Amazon, I think you need a subscription to Hulu. You used to be able to watch stuff for free, but I think you got to have a subscription for Hulu. But Amazon, there's free content there that just has embedded advertising. So if you go to the Prime Video app, you don't need to have a Prime subscription to watch some content, but a lot of that's older content. But if you're a fan of like old TV shows, you want to watch Rawhide or you want to watch the Beverly Hillbillies, or do you want to watch ALF or the Mary Tyler Moore Show? You can actually find those on Hulu and Amazon Prime. Some of those you can find for free on Amazon Prime. But let's talk about some other apps that are worth checking out. And these are things that George from Clearwater said, and I agree. I've been pushing these apps for a while. The first one is Pluto TV. One of the great things about Pluto TV is it's basically a cable system on streaming. When you open it up, it looks like your cable system guide. It has like a couple hundred channels. And they have everything from just a horror movie channel to a comedy movie channel. They'll have an entire channel devoted to Midsummer Murders or Unsolved Mysteries. Or sometimes it's a channel devoted to an actual online TV channel like BET or CNN. They have news feeds and everything. The only difference is it's not free. You have to deal with embedded advertising. So what you'll do is you'll see, you watch 20 minutes of the show, and then they'll break in and do a couple ads. And yeah, the ads tend to rotate heavily, but it's a great little platform. You've got hours and hours of content. They have like a Doctor Who channel. They show classic Doctor Who's. They got a Mystery Science Theater channel that just shows Mystery Science Theater 24 hours a day. Riff Tracks, 24 hours a day. MTV, 24 hours. And they have all that stuff. And there's always something. You may, like any cable system, you do look at it and say, oh, I'm only going to watch these three or four channels, but you can find them and just park a dial there. Now there's another one called Tubi TV, which is a free service. Again, embeds advertising. But the reason I like Tubi is because you can find a lot of obscure stuff that you can't find elsewhere. I'll give you a great example. Back last year when Dolomite Is My Name came out, and I wanted to watch the original Dolomite movie, and I found it on Tubi TV. You couldn't find it anywhere else. Now they eventually put it on Netflix, because that was a Netflix movie, but it was a great way to find it. When I watched The Plague Dogs a couple weeks ago, I covered that on the show. It was on Tubi TV. Couldn't find it anywhere else unless you could sometimes find these for rental. And Vudu has probably a decent rental selection for obscure stuff. But Tubi TV is fantastic. You even go back and find some old TV shows, like, you know, and stuff like those stuff from the 60s, Rawhide, Beverly Hillbillies, etc. And that's great. There's also other free channels like Crackle, Roku channel. YouTube even has stuff, and you can just watch that on your phone, or you can do it on your desktop, or you can get the app for TV. And Shout TV also has some really great older genre content that has embedded advertising. You just got it for free. Just search Shout TV, and you can install it into Roku. Those are some great streaming channels to find content that you otherwise wouldn't find necessarily in the top tier stuff from the other stations. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We actually have a little bit of box office to talk about. Let's talk about that really quickly. The movie Trolls World Tour came out last week on demand, and we don't get box office numbers the way we traditionally do. They aren't reported the same way for on-demand service. And some information had leaked out. Earlier in the week, there was a release that basically said that it broke all the records for an on-demand release. It did better than Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, and that did on its initial at-home viewing. It also was like something I said, it did like 10 times better than some of these other releases. The final number that I've heard come out was about $50 million is what Universal and DreamWorks got from the on-demand release, which is a fantastic number. It's on par with what Trolls, the original movie, made back, what, 4 or 5 years ago when it came out in its opening weekend. And now, this is not going to be happening with every single release. That's why you haven't seen the studios rush to release more stuff. I think they're going to wait, have a little bit of a dry spell, and if they want to drop something, they can drop something into the actual on-demand fray. But this was a great movie to do this experiment for a couple reasons. First of all, it's opening in a vacuum. There's no other movie that's opening that big on demand. And they cleared far enough away from Onward being dropped onto Disney Plus. And, you know, people are looking for new content. It's also something people would have gone to see with their families already. And I think it helps that there's no competition. There's nothing in the theaters. You can't go to the theaters. So that's your only option. It gave people something new to watch. And for $20, if you have a family or, a group that wants to watch it, you can do that. So I don't think this is necessarily a 100% game changer, but it certainly shows that there's an option. And we'll see what happens as things move on and it starts to become a little more competitive with where you can see movies as we move through the summer and hopefully get this all worked out by the fall. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is on Just Mercy. Michael B. Jordan stars as a young lawyer who works to free inmates in the South who faced unfair challenges in their trials.
The first time I visited death row, I wasn't expecting to meet somebody the same age as me. From a neighborhood just like ours. Could have been me, Mama.
But what you're doing is going to make a lot of people upset.
You always taught me to fight for the people who need the help the most. Your life is still meaningful, and I'm going to do everything possible to keep them from taking it.
You only know what you're into down here in Alabama when you're guilty from the moment you're born.
God,
Mr. McMillan,
we're done here.
This is one of your typical death penalty movies. It focuses on, in particular, the people who are on death row. And I think I said this when the movie first came out last Christmas. The problem with this movie is there's a lot of ways to approach the death penalty question. You can either approach it as saying it's just moralistically wrong. And even if a person did commit these crimes, he doesn't deserve to be put to death. You can also say the death penalty has problems because there's innocent people who are being put to death. Those are two very different arguments to make. And the problem with a lot of death penalty films is they try to make both of them. It's like an abortion movie. There are multiple arguments you can make under that abortion umbrella, just as you can make under the death penalty umbrella. And they sometimes conflict with each other. So you kind of have to pick your own. To do a cohesive movie, it's hard to have multiple options there. You kind of have to just pick one and go with it. And they kind of try and cover all of them, and it just makes it a little bit messy in terms of making the death penalty for or against argument. And I get that. I understand. That's life. That's persuasive writing, and that's how things work. Now, the movie itself, it's well put together. It's got some very good acting, particularly from Michael B. Jordan. Also, Jamie Foxx is one of the inmates. You know, Brie Larson's in it, but she's kind of throwaway in there. Her character is kind of, it's not about her. It's about Michael B. Jordan's character. And you have more development and more focus on him. And I think he does a fine job in it. You have that brooding personality you see him with in movies like Creed and Creed 2. But, you know, it works for a movie. It's not one that jumped out at me in award season. It's not something I thought they needed to have a lot of focus on, but it's worth checking out, especially if you want to contemplate the death penalty. It's a little bit heavy to watch right now because, you know, the world's ending, but, but, you know, maybe if you want something less light. Now, the Blu-ray comes with just a couple special features. It's got deleted scenes and a couple behind the scenes stuff that examines this sort of innocence and equity issues and the law, legal changes and the legal challenges. But overall, the reason if you're going to get the disc, the reason to get the disc is for the movie, not necessarily for the special features. But still, I'm going to have to say it does kind of rock.
It kind of rocks.
Also available this week are Underwater with Kristen Stewart and Police Squad! The complete series, that's what predated the Naked Gun series. And of course, 16 Candles gets a collector's release from Arrow Video. And that's it for this week. I will be returning next week and talking about Robert the Bruce and Defending Jacob. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.